I'm George Kittle, and you're listening to the Niner Guys.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Niner Guys. It is Free Agent Frenzy. I thought that was kind of a new thing, but clearly that is the moniker everyone used this year. NFL Network, ESPN, everyone thought it was a frenzy. So let's dive right into it, because the Niners were at the forefront of a lot of these things in terms of collecting some assets, losing some assets, being rumored about some assets. Let's start quickly so we can close the book, even though it's cracked open a little bit. Jimmy Garoppolo has moved on from the Niners after what we thought was going to happen 2 years ago, definitely was going to happen last year, and he has finally moved on to the Raiders, except he hasn't signed his contract yet, and we're 24 hours into the official signing period. So is this just he's taking his time driving down to Vegas? Is Vegas trying to still entice Brady to come out? Or can we close the book on Jimmy?
I think we should be able to close the book on Jimmy. But at the same time, what was his MO when it came to the offseason?
Well, I thought it was going to be get to a place he could play to, you know, become a starter and make some money. And not be an immediate bridge quarterback, which is why I think he spurned the Texans, because obviously with the number two pick, you've got to think they're going, you know, with one of the big quarterbacks. So he would be put right back into the same situation he was with Trey Lance in terms of everyone's going to be wanting to use the new shiny toy quarterback, and Jimmy would get pushed to the side.
Well, not just that, but going to the Texans, he'd be going to a no-win situation. He'd probably get hurt game one if he signed with Houston. So going to Las Vegas made a ton of sense. It was the place where, as soon as Brady decided to retire, it made the most sense for him to go to, especially with all the weapons he has there, although one less when they traded Darren Waller away, which is kind of curious. But still, with Davante Adams there, with Josh Jacobs, hopefully they have a line to protect him. But no, what I meant to say was, what was Jimmy's MO in terms of what do we know about Jimmy in the offseason? Is that he's never available for the team to contact him. So maybe he's gone missing again, even though he's supposed to be there signing his contract, doing the introductory press conference. But I don't know, maybe he's just already on vacation and they're like, dude, where'd Jimmy go? We haven't even signed on the dotted line yet.
Jimmy definitely does go off the grid for the offseason. And, you know, hey, maybe that's his, you know, dark meditation type thing that Aaron Rodgers does. He gets away, he cuts off, you know, social media and everything, and just does whatever he wants, not related to football. But yeah, you got to think his agent's like, Jimmy, we got to get to Vegas. We've got to sign this contract.
I know. Don, he's like, Jimmy, you're not done yet. You still have to sign the contract. And maybe Jimmy just texts him and Don Yee and says, George Kittle is going to be my proxy. So Kittle will do the whole press conference and all that for him.
I'm sure the Raiders would be in for that. So. But the Niners made moves, significant moves, in the first day of free agency, which is a little unusual, even though they got Charvarius Ward last year, which was, at the time, it ended up being a nice signing, a really good signing. And it was kind of a big signing for this front office, because they're usually not splashy on the first day. But they went out and they got Javon Hargrove, the defensive tackle from the Eagles. Kind of a double whammy. You add one of the best defensive linemen to your roster while depleting your, I got to think, most significant rival as at least right now in the Eagles. And what was concerning to me, that defensive line was so many free agency. We'll get to Amenihue and Ebukam and everyone. And Kinlaw's, not that he's a free agent, but just inability to stay healthy and be an impact player. You went out and got the best defensive lineman. You've signed him to a big contract, $84 million over 4 years. It's basically a two-year, $40 million contract, because they can get out of it after 2 years. But He's 30 years old. He had 10 plus sacks for the Eagles and the Niners. Again, even though Shanahan is an offensive head coach, they just continue to build as close to the ball as possible. Line, defensive line, you know, and outward. So your thoughts on the big signing of Hargrave, and then we'll get into the rest of them.
I think someone must have moved Christmas to March 13th because that was one hell of a present the 49ers delivered on the opening day of free agency. I mean, mm-hmm. I cannot believe that John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan, and Parag Marate were able to acquire the best D tackle on the market in Javon Hargrave, who is also arguably the best free agent overall. Yep. And, you know, given some of the reports that I've read, it sounds like the Niners were Hargrave's number one destination of choice as well, because not only was the deal done practically right out of the gate, but supposedly he turned down bigger offers from other teams like the Cleveland Browns, and he was amenable to a team-friendly contract structure where I think most of his money is backloaded so that this year's cap hit is only like $6 million despite like an annual average salary of $21 million over the next 4 years, mm-hmm. which is huge given our team's cap crunch and given that Nick Bosa is in line for a massive contract extension this summer. Yep. Now, as you mentioned, Hargrave on the field, complete stud. I mean,
yep.
You know, his addition, I think, takes our defensive line from being good to absolutely being Super Bowl caliber. Because, I mean, did you know that last year the Niners had 8 defensive tackles not named Eric Armstead who combined for 59 pressures, whereas Hargrave himself had 66 pressures, and the dude racked up 22 sacks over the last 3 seasons, 11 last season, mm-hmm. right? Dude was top 5 in every pass rush category this year. So, I mean, I think you could definitely count on the Niners D-line destroying the opposing offensive lines this year, because who are they going to block? If they focus on Bosa, now they've got this game wrecker in Hargrave to go along with Armstead and Drake Jackson, among others, who you know one of them's going to get loose. So, you know, and with Hargrave, he's been durable as well. I mean, that's huge because yeah. – we've seen Armstead and a lot of these guys, they get dinged up and miss time. So I think it's huge that you get a guy who can be on that D-line. You can count on him. And his addition also helps the linebackers in the secondary. So like I said, huge signing for the Niners.
And I think this helps Armstead. Armstead before was a good defensive tackle, specifically against the run, got some pressure, but Armstead being one-on-one with a guard or a center is a benefit. That's advantage Niners, because you have to double team Bosa. You're going to have to handle Hargrave with at least one guy, maybe two, or at least a chip. So you're talking about Drake Jackson on the outside going one-on-one and Eric Armstead on the inside going one-on-one. And like, those are advantage Niners when it comes to that. And then we saw later on, earlier today, they re-signed T.Y. McGill. They signed Cleveland Farrell, who I know you were clamoring for early on as a, you know, cheap rotational piece, and they got him for like $2.5 million. He's a perfect Niner reclamation project. He's a good player. He was overdrafted by the Raiders significantly, but he's a good player, and now he's going to come work with Kaserik. He's not going to be asked to do too much except do your job, like plug the holes, win a one-on-one battle, those types of things. And I think the Niners have, again, gone back and redeveloped this defensive line that is so – I mean, one thing Farrell said in his press conference was the Niners defense and the Niners defensive line is talked about around the league. It is – and Kaserik is talked about around the league as kind of the example of – what defensive lines they want to be, how they're put together, how they're coached up. So I think you're looking at another one of these guys like a DJ Jones, Kerry Hyder the first time around, Arden Key when he came as a recommendation. You're looking at a guy who is very low risk, huge possible reward, and a guy who, if you can rotate him in, is going to keep your Hargraves, your Armsteads, those guys fresher longer throughout the whole game. So I think that's big.
I had Cleveland Farrell on my radar because, you know, I knew that he was going to hit free agency and it was going to be unlikely to be re-signed by the Raiders. And I liked him coming out of college. I thought he was good at Clemson, not number four overall pick good. Mm-hmm. But he was a very good player at Clemson. So, and like you mentioned, I automatically thought he'd be the next Arden Key experiment for Chris Kocurek because what we've seen that Chris Kocurek's done with all these guys, like you mentioned, like, you know, Charles Omenihu, Samson Ebukam, all these guys go through the Kocurek program. They come here, they sign for cheap, and then they go on and they make big money, right? And that's exactly what guys like Farrell and the fact that they have this reputation is great because the Niners can go get them at bargain prices and then they give us great bang for our buck and then they move on. But that's the thing is that's why I was so shocked at being able to get Javon Hargrave because I thought, you know, I knew we were going to be losing a bunch of our guys. And I thought because of our cap situation that we'd have to be looking at all sorts of these kind of, you know, players who are more they'd be bargain shopping. In other words, is what I thought, you know, but that's why I think it's funny. I don't know if you've been hearing some of the chatter, you know, about the Hargrave signing being like, dude, if we had this money, why don't we just sign DeForest Buckner when we could have? And I just feel like, you know, people, we all love DeForest Buckner. We all love to have kept DeForest Buckner, but it was a different time and a different team. And I think people are just overlooking the reason why we're able to acquire a guy like Hargrave now, whereas we couldn't back then, because now we have a quarterback room that's largely making peanuts, right? Whereas when Buckner's contract came up, we just paid Jimmy G or made him the highest paid quarterback in the league.
Right.
You know, exactly. Which is obviously not an issue right now. And the salary cap has grown. So I personally, you know, give the team credit for, well, A, admitting that it hasn't worked out with Javon Kinlaw and that they're going to, you know, doing this to rectify the issue and fortify the line. They're going for it. They're being aggressive, you know, knowing that this is their window. They got to capitalize.
Yep. I totally agree with you on the whole. I've heard the whole DeForest. Well, you could have just paid DeForest this much. I get it. But we've gone over that multiple times in terms of, yes, I would have loved to have kept Buckner. But Jimmy was making 20 plus. The salary cap was what? 40 million less at that time. So you're talking about like a $65 million swing. You got Jimmy off the books and the salary cap has grown. Not to mention, we talked about it before, it allowed us to re-sign Jimmy Ward, who's been instrumental in the couple years since DeForest, you know, and they took a swing with Javon Kinlaw. You look at Javon Kinlaw, and he is just a massive human being, played at, you know, a big SEC school. So they took a swing, and his injuries have made him essentially a non-factor. Like, every once in a while, he's in the game and you see it. He'll stuff a run. He stuffs the, you know, that goal line stand type of thing. Like, you see then you're like, there he is. Like, he manhandles him. There he is. And then he'll get pushed around. And then he'll end up on injured reserve for 3 weeks because of knee sweat. Like, I get it. But those are the types of things that you always talk about. It's not a character thing. It was a health thing. If this guy could stay healthy, he can help us. Didn't work for him, you know? And they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. So he's in his last year with the Niners. Unless he explodes somehow and healthy, great. Then the Niners, it's all upside. It is all upside for them. And just quickly, we talk about, you're talking Bosa, Armstead, Hargrave, Drake Jackson. You're starting four. Then you got Cleveland Farrell, Kevin Givens, Javon Kinlaw, Alex Barrett, T.Y. McGill. Like, you already got your 10 guys. Now, I would still think they're going to probably go out and find a defensive end, someone who's going to want to come in on a one-year prove-it deal. There's still, I think, some pass rushers out there that could make a difference. Look, nobody expected Charles Omenihu to be who he was when they traded him in midseason. Everyone thought Samson Ebukam could be something when they snatched him from the Rams, and he produced pressure. So I don't think you're obviously not going to get a name. You're not going to get the guy who, you know, you're a couple of days into free agency. The guys you get now, probably overestimated their value or looking for the big contract, didn't get it. So they're going to have to scale back and go, I need a 1 year prove it deal, make a little money. And what better way than go to the best defense, put up some statistics, and then go get paid? A la Arden Key. What is Arden Key got paid when he left the Niners to go to Jacksonville, came a free agent, and now he got paid by the Titans. So I think the Niners have done well considering their cap situation, considering the holes that they had, and considering they have the Bosa extension looming out there to probably get done in late July, early August, like they do with all of these guys. So they've got to earmark that for, you know, for Nick. He's going to become he's probably going to be the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. So Parag's going to have to work some magic, keep kind of a low number, give him a big signing bonus, push it out over a couple of years. So we'll see. But let me get your thoughts on some of the other guys. The Niners re-signed Jake Brendel. They re-signed, we talked about McGill. They brought back Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, who was a key special teams guy and is now going to get a shot at linebacker now that Azeez Al-Shaair moved on to Tennessee. So those were the re-signings. Nothing sexy, you know, but let's talk about the guys that they brought in from other places. Let's start with your buddy Sam Darnold, a guy we talked about 2 years ago as, do the Niners make a play for Sam Darnold? Is that who they bring in? Is he the reclamation project Kyle needs? He became a free agent after this past year in Carolina. He comes in as, I don't know, you tell me, quarterback one, quarterback two, quarterback three. He signed essentially a $4.5 million contract. I think, where is it? Yeah, $4.5 million. So he got essentially the same thing as Drew Lock's getting to back up in Seattle. So it's definitely backup money. However, we know Brock's out for the next 4 to 6 months. We know Trey's going to have his shot at running the offense. So give me your thoughts on bringing in Sam Darnold, because rarely does a QB3 generate as much debate as it did in 49er fan land.
Well, I think what the Sam Darnold signing signifies to me is that the Niners wanted a third-string quarterback who they believe could help the team win should the need arise for that third-string quarterback to play due to injury. Because I think we're all still scarred by what happened last season, where we saw three of our starting quarterbacks go down to season-ending injuries. But they didn't want a David Blau or a Nathan Peterman or even a Nick Mullins. You know, they wanted, in essence, a QB3 who's good enough to be a QB2, which is why we were hearing names like a Baker Mayfield being floated as a potential signee early on. But as I said during our last podcast, that was just going to be a really difficult needle to thread, because, you know, you wanted to get a quarterback who could be a number two on another team's depth chart, and you're asking him to be QB3 on the Niners. But lo and behold, they found a guy who was willing to accept the role, because I think Sam Darnold's been scarred himself. Yeah. Having gone through, you know, the nightmare of Adam Crazy Eyes Gase with the Jets and then dealing with the clueless Matt Rhule in Carolina. So, you know, and I think according to one of the Carolina Panthers commentators who I heard on the radio, he basically said that Darnold was looking to go to a stable team, right, to get some good coaching and be back in California. That he said that it actually meant a lot to him to be back. So I think that's why all this sort of fit, right, for what the Niners were looking for and what Sam Darnold was looking for, which is not to say that, you know, he's content to just be the third fiddle. I'm sure Darnold's hoping to learn the Shanahan system and somehow find a way to resurrect his career. And should things play out in a way that he actually sees the field, then that's gravy, I guess, for him. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the Darnold acquisition is in any way a nod against Trey Lance and the Niners being out on him as the starter.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield, I think, it's tough with Baker Mayfield because he signed with the Bucs 1 year, $8.5 million. So significantly more than Darnold signed for, but significantly less from what you would think a starting quarterback's going to get. I mean, that is definitely a one-year prove-it deal. Clearly, Mayfield didn't have any other suitors out there that were willing to, you know, go multiple years with him. So it might be a really nice place for Mayfield, just for him personally, in terms of, okay, you got to beat out Kyle Trask to be the starter. You got what? You got Godwin. You got what's his name?
Evans.
You know, so you got some weapons. Can you produce to the point where you're back into starter salary money? So we'll see. I mean, that's and you're right. Sam Darnold, I believe isn't Sam Darnold the same age or younger than Brock Purdy?
No, I think he's 25, maybe even 26.
So yes, but regardless, he's young. He is really young for seemingly being in the league for a long time. Remember, he came out of SC as a redshirt sophomore. So, you know, yeah, he got bashed around. We all remember the clip of him seeing ghosts that they captured on the mic. Yeah, he's been to a couple places that no one would claim to be quarterback friendly. And so to get Kyle's hands on him, yeah, I think this is kind of, you know, his way of saying, I need to rehab my image. I need to rehab my ability. I'm at a place that has had trouble with the quarterback staying healthy over the past couple of years. So there is an outside shot that I can get some playing time. I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence about what it means for Trey Lance. I'm on the fence for what it means for Trey Lance, because I can see a situation that Kyle somewhat falls in love or falls in really like with Sam Darnold's ability. And because we're not going to see him during it. You're going to see him during OTAs. You're going to see him, you know, by all accounts, he's a smart guy. He's not running against defenses. So he's going to be out there probably making the right read, probably making the right throw, making things good. And I can see Kyle going, this guy, boy, you know, I don't think there's any doubt. Much like last year, I think there was some question about if the Niners were going to keep three quarterbacks. Remember, what's his name? Who was the guy that signed?
Sudfeld.
Nate Sudfeld that's QB3. He's making $2 million. He's going to be on the roster. Then Purdy beats him out. Oh, we got to keep three. That, I don't think there's any question the Niners are keeping three quarterbacks on the roster. So Darnold should be safe with his roster spot. And I can see, you know, them just kind of really enjoying a reclamation project that is Sam Darnold, pro-style offense.
Well, you know, look, we just witnessed Mr. Irrelevant take the Niners to the NFC Championship and essentially make Jimmy G irrelevant to the Niners. So I guess the likelihood of Darnold emerging and surpassing Lance, or heck, even Purdy, is possible, right? Unlikely. I would say the one big advantage that Darnold does have over a guy like Lance is what you mentioned before, right? For a guy who's this young, he's already been in the league for like five seasons and played in 56 NFL games, whereas Trey's only played in like three, you know, one of which was in a monsoon. So maybe that's why for me, that's why I have higher hopes for Lance, because he's still in this developmental phase, you know, an unknown. Whereas with Darnold, yeah, he's played, but man, it's been rough. I mean, he's had the lowest QB rating since coming into the league, and he's thrown 55 interceptions in those 56 games, fumbled the ball 35 times, and as you mentioned, claimed to see ghosts. So if there's anything Kyle Shanahan will not tolerate, are turnovers.
Yep.
So it's hard for me to see Darnold suddenly figuring it all out and outplaying Lance. So at this point, I think he's just damaged good, but hopefully he's still good enough to push Lance to be better. Unlike last season when Trey was essentially handed the starting job because we had Nate Sudfeld, who was no threat at all.
Let's talk about some of the other free agents that were signed or left. The Niners did sign Tashaun Gibson. That was, you know, solidifies the safety spot, which made Jimmy Ward not expendable, but it made it clear he wasn't going to come back as a safety. If he came back, it was probably going to be as that nickelback, which I think would have been great for them. I don't think he was in love with playing nickel. He follows D'Amico Ryans down to Houston. Mike McGlinchey hits the free agent market, and as of this moment, has the second largest free agent contract in the offseason. And you shake your head, and you know, and many people shake their head, but it's the type of thing that I know that obviously the Niners weren't going to get into that, but they now have a hole to fill. So Colton McKivitz is going to probably get first shot at playing right tackle. I wouldn't be surprised if they spend one of their third round draft picks, which is their one of their first three picks of this upcoming draft, on a right tackle to come in and battle. But we're gonna learn pretty quickly how replaceable Mike McGlinchey was, because everyone knows good in the run, you know, tough to watch in the past. So McKivitz has to at least hit that bar. For much cheaper. So McGlinchey goes to the Denver Broncos on a huge $87.5 million contract. The Niners lose Samson Ebukam to Indy and Charles Omenihu to Kansas City, two of their defensive ends. And a little bit of a surprise, Emmanuel Mosley, who tore his ACL this year and probably on track to be back in September. I thought he was going to get the Jason Verrett treatment. He was going to come, Niners were going to give him, you know, probably just a little bit more than anyone else would. He was going to come back to the team, you know, claim one of those spots, corner spots. But he opts not to, and he goes to the Detroit Lions on a one-year, $6 million contract. Again, probably more money than the Niners wanted to spend on a guy coming off an injury. The Lions had plenty of money to spend, so he takes the money and run. And all the best to Mosley, because he came in as an undrafted free agent and quickly ascended to the, you know, the upper echelon of cornerbacks in the league. You remember the beginning of the season, everyone's talking, are Mosley and Ward the best tandem of corners in the league? So losing him, I can't say it's going to be tough because of the injury. He was going to be questionable coming back, but it's going to be tough to replace what a healthy Mosley was. Charvarius Ward and D'Amador Lenore will get first crack at it. And the other signing was Isaiah Oliver. So Oliver comes over from the Falcons. He's going to probably battle Sam Womack, last year's draft pick, for that corner, that nickel slot. So, again, you're going with somewhat of an untested back end of the defense. We've seen it before. It looks a lot better when you have such a stud front seven. So can Ward and Lenore lock down the corners? Is Gibson going to maintain that fountain of youth? We know Talanoa Hufanga was, you know, borderline all pro last year. So your thoughts on the losses the Niners sustained?
Well, first of all, you know, good on the Niners, scouts for finding these, like, diamond in the rough gems in Azeez Al-Shaair and Emmanuel Mosley, these undrafted free agents who came in and became stud players, right? I was disappointed that we weren't able to bring back Emmanuel Mosley, because obviously with the injury, the hope was he would come back on a cheaper kind of one-year prove-it deal. But clearly he was so good that the Lions were willing to take a risk and pay him the whole $6 million and for him to fight for a starting job there. So I don't blame him at all for taking that deal. And I don't blame the Niners for not being able to pay that much. I'm sure they were looking more along the lines of like a $3 million deal at most. And I don't blame any of these guys for taking the money and running, right? Like, get that bag, as they say. Even Mike McGlinchey, I'm really happy for him that he got the money he did. Just glad that he didn't get it from the Niners because, you know, I mean, I'm not saying him and like a Tom Compton were on the same level, but I just remember when he went down and we had to stick Compton in at right tackle, it wasn't that big of a drop off. So I think that's sort of the hope with Colton McKivitz, though it still makes me nervous. And I think I'd feel more comfortable if they found a way to you know, bring in a maybe a George Fant, like a veteran like that, or a Billy Turner. Just, you know, just instead of just going, all right, we're just going to rely on McKivitz and then a draft pick, especially since we don't know where that draft pick is going to come from and who that might be at the moment. And McKivitz, to me, you know, he did well filling in, but that's almost what I feel like he is, more of that fill-in swing tackle kind of a player. And especially the way they're paying him, it seems like that's the way the Niners might be viewing him as well. So I'm not sure. I don't think we've closed the book on where the direction in which the Niners are going with offensive tackle. But it also makes me nervous. You were talking about the secondary, right? Losing Jimmy Ward, which I hated to see because, you know, he's really, especially this last year, playing the nickel. Man, he came, I know he didn't want to play it, and it was tough for him to kind of pick it up mid-season after being injured and losing his safety spot, even though he thought that was his, and he played safety really well. But at the same time, holy cow, I don't think he's ever had that many interceptions. I feel like he made a ton of plays in that nickel, which is why it makes me nervous, because I'm like, okay, now you're taking away this kind of instinctive guy who just, I mean, he's a guy who covers the Travis Kelce's, right? And he's the guy who we have covering, you know, like, let's say if it was, if McCaffrey was still on the Panthers, right? He's the guy who I feel like we depend on in that intermediate area to make sure that nothing gets through there. So yes, we signed Isaiah Oliver, who I guess is kind of a poor man's Jimmy Ward, because he does have that versatility, plays a little slot, which is what he played this last year. And I think he had his best season, but he's also played outside corner. He's also played a little safety. But then putting all of our eggs in the Tayshaun Gibson basket at free safety, again, makes me a little nervous because he's on the older side. And I mean, you just don't know, right, when that cliff's going to fall, and maybe last year was his best year. And I just hope that the Niners aren't getting too cocky again. Like, hey, we got it, we're good. Kind of like how it was 2 years ago when all of a sudden, when we needed some guys, whether it be due to injury or whatnot, and we had to start scrounging through the scrap heap, and we came up with Josh Norman.
Josh Norman, yeah.
And I don't want to do that again. So hopefully, I don't know, maybe Ambry Thomas will take that next step, right? The way that Diamador Lenore did this past season.
So for Oliver, he's 26. He was a second round draft pick of the Colts. And I think one of the things that the Niners liked about him was size. He's a big corner. He's 6'1", 200 pounds with 33.5-inch arms. And he played 62% of the snaps for the Falcons out of the slot. So you're talking about a bigger slot guy. So whether that's just tall and lanky, or that puts a little muscle on him where he can help out against those, you know, those matchup guys like Kelce, like McCaffrey before he was on those types of guys. So I think that's the type of thing that the Niners are looking for, because it's all about being more athletic for them, right? Can we create the turnovers? Can we be versatile enough that, you know, this guy can flip inside if needed? Can he flip outside if needed? And I think that what we've seen over the past couple of years about how good the Niners defense has been is, we've seen Jimmy Ward go from safety to nickel. We've saw Lenore start out his first game in the NFL at the slot and then kick out to the outside. You know, so we've seen those types of things come from the Niners. So I think this might be a piece to do. And I think, but I also think Sam Womack showed flashes as a rookie that he could be a player. He also got burned a couple of times. He got spun around as rookies tend to do, but I think that's going to be an interesting battle come training camp. You got the guy who's been in the system for a year, who's younger, opposed to the new free agent signing, who's got 4 years in the league and, you know, has some athletic ability.
Yeah. And I just thought about Jimmy Ward, where whenever we played the Rams, who was the guy who was in Cooper Kupp's, you know, hip pocket. Was Jimmy, right. You know, Jimmy Ward was in Cooper Kupp's hip pocket. So big shoes to fill, whether it's Isaiah Oliver, whether it's Samuel Womack, you know, but Oliver did have that one interception. And that one interception this year came against
Jimmy
G.
Niners, we mentioned Demetrius Flanagan Fowles re-signs for 1 year. Basically, he's going to be slotted in at least right now to take the place of Azeez Al-Shaair, who moves on to the Titans. And I don't know if you've kind of noticed, but Rand Carthon is grabbing a couple current Niners, Al-Shaair, Daniel Brunskill. He signed Arden Key, who he knew with the Niners when he was here a couple years ago. So Rand Carthon is building kind of in Niners mold. And then you saw D'Amico. We talked about D'Amico taking Jimmy Ward. He also took Hassan Ridgeway, the defensive tackle. So we talked about it, you know, over the past couple of years. Who's Saleh going to take? Who's he going to rate as our fridge? Who's Mike McDaniel going to take? You know, like the more and more of these Niner, whether it be John Lynch disciples or Kyle Shanahan disciples, if they've been with this front office and this organization long enough to see how they build things and how successful it is, you're going to start seeing it around the league even more. So it's not surprising that they're targeting the guys who may not have been big name free or big name guys, but solid contributors. New GM just has to build a team, build that depth, and then go on. So the Niners are going to have, you know, some depth holes right now to you know, Phil, and they still got 11 draft picks. So you're going to have bodies to pick from. Free agency's not over. I would expect, you know, another couple guys to come in on, you know, lesser deals to battle for roster spots or provide the depth that we've talked about. So the free agent frenzy has been, you know, pretty good to the Niners, and they've been very active. They've been very active.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that the Jets didn't really raid the Niners as much as I thought they would. Now, maybe it's because the salary cap was sort of tightened at, you know, it was during that whole COVID, you know, era. So I think they only grabbed Tevin Coleman. Is that right? Yeah. And then since then, they signed Laken Tomlinson, but it seemed like with the Dolphins, they grabbed a few more guys. And then this offseason, I felt like both Rand Carthon and D'Amico just basically grabbed them all. Like, all right, we're taking all the free agents. So right.
Yep.
I thought that was kind of interesting. But the one free agent that we haven't talked about, Niner free agent, that is Robbie Gould.
Yep.
I know that he indicated that he kicked his last extra point, his last field goal as a Niner, but do you buy it? Do you believe it? He's still out there.
I don't believe it. I actually always thought he would be coming back to the Niners. I assume the way I assumed it played out was the Niners offered him a small raise off of his $4 million salary last year, you know, 4.2, 4.4, something like that. On, you know, a one-year deal, maybe a fake two-year deal, something like that. And Robbie maybe was trying to cash in on, hey, I've never missed a kick in the playoffs. What, you know, there's a lot of – with all the missed field goals and extra points, Brett Maher, for teams in prime time situations, you know, it's real easy for a team to go like, who's the most accurate kicker? Boom, get him, sign him. That it's don't have to worry about it. But I don't think the market was there for a over 40 kicker who seemingly doesn't have the leg consistently to put the ball in the end zone on kickoffs. He only kicked two 50-plus yard field goals. So you're not talking about a guy who's stretching it out to 60. Now, you know, maybe that's the Niners just – that's not the way they play. That's not the way their kickoff – special teams works. They try and drop the ball right on the goal line to tackle him inside the 20. I get it. But I think Robbie's going to be back. I don't think anyone is going to drop a $5 million contract in his lap asking him to come. Certainly not a playoff team. I mean, if you're
You don't think the Cowboys after the Brett Maher experience is going to be like, you know what? We don't even care about any of those things that Todd just said. We just want to make the field goal.
No.
Not have to worry about it. Not have to give him a pep talk pregame to get his his mojo back.
No, because that was the only team. I was just gonna say, if you're an NFL kicker, especially Robbie Gould, what you gotta be thinking, what team can win? What team is not gonna be playing cold weather from November through January? So You're not going to Chicago. You're not going to Green Bay. You're not going to Buffalo. Okay, who, you know, who's plays indoors or in, and good. Dallas, like that's the only team that you could think, and maybe that's what he thought. He thought, well, Dallas clearly needs a kicker. Jerry's got plenty of money. He's just gonna break me off a $5 million check, you know, and I'll go kick for the Cowboys. So I mean, it still might happen, but again, we're past the initial wave of free agents where teams seem to have put all of, you know, done the full court pressure on recruiting the guys that they want. And now it's back to, well, what kind of deals can we get? Like, not that you're shopping in the bargain bin, but, you know, yeah, we'll sign, you know, this guy for this much. We'll sign Cleveland Farrell for 2.5. That's a great, you know, low risk, high reward guy. Oh, you know, Robbie is still out there. Robbie, come on. We'll still give you the $4 million. No problem. You know, we're not, it's a low pressure situation. We don't ask you to do too much. We're not asking you to kick 60 plus. But I gotta think the Niners are in the market for a kicker, whether it be in the draft or at least signing a guy or two as undrafted free agents, because Robbie's been good, but he can't kick forever. I mean, he is 40 plus.
Yeah, but they just – okay, so a team that signs a Javon Hargrave to that huge deal doesn't mess around with the rookie – kicker from the draft. I just, you know what I mean? Or undrafted, yep. Right? I mean, they don't have the patience. They gave up all those assets to draft Trey Lance at number three and have zero patience to develop them. They're like, you got to be good right away, kid. You know? Yep. And yep. So it's like, if that's your attitude, how can you realistically say, yeah, you know, we're good drafting a kicker? I mean, I just don't see it. And I just feel like, you know, right now it's just posturing, like you said, right? Robbie wants a certain amount. The Niners are like, look, we don't want to get to that level. So it might be a stalemate. I mean, we're dealing with a kicker who picks up fights with, like,
yes,
Jalen Ramsey, right? Who will kick his warm-up kicks right in the face of the other team as they're warming up. So I don't expect any less out of a Robbie Gould, right? He's kind of wired a little differently. Yep. But if we don't get him, then I – fully expect the Niners to go after like an Eddie Pinheiro or one of these veteran kickers who've shown, yeah, you know, that they can handle kicking, you know, in the NFL. Like not because, you know, like rookies, gosh, they're just, I mean, kickers are hit and miss to begin with, but rookie kickers especially. And I just think of Younghoe Koo, right? Here's a guy who's getting paid near the top of the kicking spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
But do you remember what happened when he first came into the league?
Yeah, he was all over the place.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He was all over the place. He got cut.
Yep.
Right? And then he finally found his footing, pun fully intended, with the Falcons. And look at him now. But that's the thing. It's kind of like the Niners cannot afford to have an inaccurate or, you know, inconsistent kicker be the reason why, after all they've done – to have it come down to a kick and not have it not, and then have like a Brett Maher situation.
Four kickers have signed this free agency. So maybe just looking at those, you said Robbie either overplayed his hand or overestimated what he was going to get, because Matt Gay, he went from the Rams to the Colts. Now we know the Rams.
He got a lot,
but we know the Rams are just basically cutting, you know, they are in reset the cap mode totally. So Gay goes to Indianapolis on a 4-year, $22 million. So $5.6 million average. Now, that's a lot of money, you know, for a kicker. But the other guys, Matt Prater re-signs with Arizona for $3.7 million. Greg Zuerlein re-signs with the Jets for $2.6 million. And Greg Joseph signs with Minnesota for $2 million. So you're talking about, there's your free agent kicker market. You're talking about guys who are 28, 35, 38, 28, you know, take away. I mean, not again, I'm sure Robbie's looking at Matt Gay's contract and going, there it is. That's what I want. But, you know, more likely you're talking 2.6, 3.7. All right, Robbie, we'll slot you in at 4. You're the oldest of all these guys. Boom, done. You mentioned Pinheiro. Pinheiro. The other guys who are currently at Mason Crosby, 38, Randy Bullock, 33, I don't think the Niners want anything to do with Brett Maher, you know, 33. Chase McLaughlin, Quinn Nordin, and Riley Patterson. Those are the only free agent kickers. I don't none of them inspire a whole lot of confidence, considering, yeah, you know, he'll have some kicks during the regular season, but can he go into Lambeau and kick in the snow if needed in January? Can he go down to Dallas and kick and win a playoff game against the Cowboys? That's what this team is building for.
Yeah, speaking of having confidence, I know you talked about the linebackers losing Al-Shaair and then giving Flanagan fouls and maybe even Oren Burks the opportunity to kind of step into his slot. But I don't know, man. I still feel like they need to find somebody either in the draft, or I know Miles Jack just got released by the Steelers. I don't know if he's in the bargain bin at this point in his career yet, but I just feel like, again, I think the Niners are in that, you know, Rams circa 2021, Eagles circa 2022. Like, we're pushing all our chips in. We're going for it this year kind of a thing. So, whether it be linebacker or even, we talked about defensive end, but real quick, like, is Jordan Willis coming back, or is, because Steve Wilks with Carolina, is he going to bring his boy Matt Ioannidis in, or is Yannick Ngakoue thinking, look, I've made my money, let's go and let's win something, and that hopefully I can cash in on that.
All solid names that I would think the Niners have put in calls to the agents going, look, we have this amount of money today to sign your guy. So if that works, great. If not, best of luck to you. But you're talking about guys like Bud Dupree who are out there as, a pass rusher. Bobby Wagner's out there. Are you looking, what about a guy like that? Who could he come in for? I mean, he just got a huge amount of money a year? Was it only a year with the Rams?
Yeah. Yep.
So does he want to reduce the salary in exchange for a shot at the Super Bowl? Maybe. You got Melvin Ingram, Denzel Perryman. You got a lot of guys out there you mentioned. I would love Miles Jack, 27 years old. I mean, bring him back to California. I mean, so there are still some guys out there who someone's going to get, some good players relatively cheap on deals where the guy's looking to prove it. The guy's looking to make another, either a last stand, a last chase at the ring, or I'm just tired of playing for Bill in the, Corey Littleton. I'm tired of playing for Carolina. Get me to, hey, Steve Wilks, remember me? I was your, bring me over. So.
And I know the Niners don't seem to care about tight ends beyond George Kittle, but I don't know. Austin Hooper, he's out there. OJ Howard is out there.
That's the name. That's the name. I mean, I loved him coming out of Alabama. I thought he was going to be a difference maker. I thought he was going to be a matchup nightmare. He hasn't been. Maybe coming to the Niners, because the Niners right now, Kittle and Charlie Warner, that's it. So Dwelly and Croft are both free agents. I don't anticipate them, coming back. And I brought it up because I found this, very interesting, or not interesting, but this guy who's basically, he's cataloging all the confirmed meetings that the Niners are having with players. And the Niners have met with 13 tight ends, either at the Combine or the Senior Bowl, on official meetings. So that's not even guys who are like just walking by and, hey, how's it going? Like, those are official meetings that, like, we want to get to know you a little bit more. So I definitely think tight end is in there.
On their radar.
Is definitely on their radar. I would anticipate a fourth and seven. I think they're going to spend two draft picks on tight ends. I mean, because they're going to carry three of them. I don't think Warner's going to be, the guy. Can they get, a half? I mean, again, Kittle's your starter. You're already looking for a backup. So let's get a backup tight end in the fourth round or the fifth round. That's their magic round. So, yeah, I totally agree. Tight end, totally on their radar. Both – I don't know if it's going to be in free agency just because of the money aspect, but it's definitely on the radar to find some depth pieces. So, let's see what else. Oh, you mentioned Jordan Willis. That is a guy I expect the Niners to bring back. That's a guy who he re-signed last year. He's been productive as a rotational piece. I would think he's coming back. But I also thought Maurice Hurst might be a guy coming back, and he just left for a one-year deal. So, again, you're talking about guys who are going to get one-year deals. Are they going to go to a place that they can – what was Jimmy Garoppolo's MO? What are these guys – do they want to get – is it about the money because they need – they want to tack on a few little – couple zeros for their bank account? Is it, I want to get to a place because I still feel I have one good contract left to sign, so I want to prove it and get a three-year deal next year? Is it, hey, I'm at the tail end, I got to find a winning organization? Like, all these guys have a different MO out there. So what is it that's going to take some of these guys to bring it in? So we'll see. It's today's Thursday. So we're just over 24 hours into officially signing, but it's 4 days from the legal tampering period, and you started to hear all the news, and it's kind of all falling into place. No one's pulled a Josh McDaniel, and everyone's, oh, he's going to Indy. Just kidding. I'm staying with the Patriots. Like, no one has pulled that yet. All the news that's been reported has come true, so we'll see what happens. Other notes, the Niners weren't the only team in free agency, obviously, but we talked a lot about the quarterbacks going into it. The quarterback who is still out there is Lamar Jackson. And I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts are, if they've changed at all. There have been no reports that anyone is sniffing around like, well, yeah, Lamar, what would it take? Oh, we're glad to give up 2 first-round draft picks. So I think Lamar is kind of in a situation where it's just going to be sign with the Ravens, or if Aaron Rodgers and everything falls through with the Jets, could the Jets come? So the latest news is Aaron Rodgers says he wants to be a Jet. So it's going to come down to the Packers and the Jets agreeing on compensation and agreeing when to execute it. Because for the Packers, they're in no hurry to trade Rodgers. There's no escalator of payment in the offseason. They can literally just sit on his rights until training camp, when he could force their hand by showing up and going, all right, let's play some football. And it's like, okay, well, you can't get hurt because then we're going to owe you the $50 million. But if you're the Jets, you certainly don't want – you want this done as quickly as possible. So I'm sure my thought is the Packers are just trying to squeeze the Jets for one more thing. I mean, who knows? Whatever the compensation is, I'm sure the Packers are like, throw in that 2025 fourth rounder and we'll get it done. And the Jets are in a situation where it's like, they got to get it done. The news has been out there. Aaron says he wants to play for the Jets. The Jets fans would riot if this news has come out and they've traded. If you're Joe Douglas, the GM for the Jets, do you just give the Packers within reason what they want? Or are you going to play hardball and go like, we're good. You're not going to pay. You're eventually not going to pay him. You're not going to let him play. So look, here's our offer. Or do the Jets go, Lamar, what do you want? Cause we got the draft picks and then we're going to leave the Packers holding the bag. So if you're Joe Douglas, you're basically telling the Packers, look, we know you're not keeping them, so let's get this done. Otherwise you're going to end up cutting him and not getting any draft picks for it. So what's your Aaron Rodgers thoughts?
Oh, the Aaron Rodgers saga just will not end.
Nope.
I just want it to end. That's my thought. But and that's the thing, right? Don't you think that's like the one thing you didn't mention in terms of Green Bay? Like, yes, you could say theoretically they don't have the pressure or the need to move on, but I feel like they are just as tired of Aaron Rodgers as everybody else is. So, yes, they can just sit on it and try to squeeze the Jets for more. But I think that, I don't know how much longer it's going to go, but definitely by the draft, it'll get sorted out because I don't think either team would want it to, you know, linger on any further. And not only that, the Jets have basically gone grocery shopping. Like Aaron Rodgers is giving the Jets a list of who all of his Green Bay buddies.
Oh, no, no, not according to Aaron. I didn't give him a demands list.
Whatever it is. I don't know. He likes using words like, it is my intention to sign with the Jets. I was immunized. I don't care what he says anymore.
I was just giving the Jets a scouting report on guys I've played with who've been really good when, you know, when I've had the chance to play with them. Okay.
Yeah. So the fact that the Jets have been signing, or I don't know, have they signed, like, your Alan Lazard, your Randall Cobb?
They signed Lazard.
Yeah. Okay. And then supposedly they may, maybe they're just like, look, that's it. We'll sign all the other guys once you're in the building. But,
right. Yeah.
You know, because supposedly there's, I think, Randall Cobb's on the list. I think the 80-year-old Mercedes Lewis is on the list.
Yep.
I'm surprised Robert Tonyan wasn't on the list, but I don't know if he's signed with the Bears already.
That was the news that he was going to the Bears, so I don't
know. Yeah, so, but, yeah, so I just feel like both sides really just want to just get this done. And not just both sides. I think the world wants it to get done so we don't have to hear about him anymore. Yeah. But what's funny is I thought I heard on the radio something along the lines that there was like a free agent that Aaron wanted, like offensive lineman who Aaron wanted to sign with the Jets because intentions are to sign with the Jets.
Yep.
Apparently after hearing the plan, that offensive lineman signed with another team. They didn't say who that offensive lineman was, but I think that's pretty funny if that were true.
Yeah. So Tonyan has gone from Green Bay to the Chicago Bears. Lazard has gone from the Green Bay to the Jets, and yeah, Cobb is still out there. I agree with you. And Mercedes Lewis still. I'm sure Rodgers said, "Hey, you know, I would really like to play with these guys still." And I'm sure the Jets are, "We'd really love for you to play with them too here." So, you know, as soon as you get here, hey, you know what? Tell your boys, don't sign anywhere else. Because as soon as you get here, we'll sign them. But
oh yeah, and I think Odell Beckham's on that list too, right?
When I read that, I thought, is Aaron just like trying to play GM? Like he's just throwing, like he's never played with Odell. I don't know if the Jets want to deal with Odell. Odell was still talking about being a $20 million receiver. I'm like, that's got to be so far down the lines. Like, Aaron, how about you sign? We'll get you here. Then we'll have a discussion and whatnot. Heck, we'll bring him in for a workout, but we're not going to.
He's like the Hans Gruber. Right. He's holding everybody hostage.
Yep.
And then he's making these demands. And even his, like, you know, his partners are like, wait, who do you want free? And he's like, I don't know. I just read about them in like Time magazine.
Right.
He's just like messing with everybody at this point.
Yeah. Can we talk salary cap 101 real quick? Cause
that it really doesn't exist and that it's just all made up. You know, what is that with the guy from Wolf of Wall Street?
Is just a pyramid
the Fugazi doesn't really exist. You're going to start doing the chant.
Yeah. Yeah. And
is that what they all do before they sign?
There was, someone we both know, you know, is constantly harping on the fact of, just all you got to do is restructure that, give them the vet minimum, and then everyone's happy. It's like, no, they're not happy. And they're not happy because, you know, for this reason, the Niners are still paying Dee Ford many millions of dollars. Like the fact that the Niners have to account for, I want to say, more than $5 million in Dee Ford's salary.
Still. That's crazy.
Is the type of thing that this is why you can't restructure and just continue to kick the can down the road. I mean, the Rams are showing it to us right now, but they're losing all. But the salary cap basically is, and, you know, look, I'm a nerd. Like, you know, I love the inner workings of all this. When you sign a contract, your signing bonus is spread out over however many years up to five that you can sign for, which is why you see all of these big time guys like a McGlinchey signed 5-year deals, because that's the maximum amount of years they can spread their salary cap over, or their signing bonus. So if McGlinchey signs a $50 million signing bonus, just because it's nice round numbers, he gets a $50 million check. That's in his bank account. He goes buy whatever he wants. For accounting purposes, every year of that contract, there's $10 million, $10 million, $10 million, $10 million. So that's across the board. So if they cut McGlinchey 3 years into it, they on the books is still $20 million, which is why these teams take these large base salaries. So say Javon Hargrave, he's like $19 million in the third year. So what could the Niners do? They're going to take that $19 million and make it $3 million and spread out $16 million over the rest of his contract. So they might tack on a couple more voidable years. So his salary number drops from 19 to 3, but he's not losing money. He still has that check that he cashed initially. All it does for accounting purpose is spread it out. But that's why you think of, boy, the Niners are strapped for cash. Yes, because some of their guys are not on the team still collecting a lot of money, aka D Ford. And that's because how many times did the Niners have to restructure him? And now they're paying the piper. So it's not as easy as just restructure everyone because, oh yeah, everyone's willing to take less money and it doesn't matter. No, you're kicking that can down the road, and you're spreading out a big signing bonus over a maximum of 5 years. So eventually, when this guy is not on your team, accounting wise, you're still paying him. So Fred Warner just restructured. So basically the Niners are confident or believe, yeah, Fred's going to be with us for 3 or 4 or 5 years. Like, we're not going to be into this contract 3 years and have to eat a whole bunch of money. He's going to be with us. That's why you can't sign Trent Williams right now for 5 years, because what are you going to get out of Trent Williams? 2 more years, maybe? So then you're going to have huge numbers for 3 years just eating up your cap space. So that was just, it could have been my final thought, but it was just, I keep hearing this. Just do it. Just restructure. It's fake money. Yes, it's fake money in terms of these guys aren't collecting a paycheck for that. But on Excel spreadsheet that Parag has to deal with, it's like the more you push out into the future, the better, because the hope is the salary cap goes up. So it's not going to eat up a bigger percentage, but it's still going to be there.
Thank you, Professor Kleinhines.
That's my lesson for the day. Lesson for the day. Yes.
But it's also why I'm shocked that they've been able to do what they've done so far.
Correct. Absolutely.
Because I thought they were already up against it, whether it's the D Ford sort of legacy salary, dead cap, salary cap stuff, to all these signings that they've already made. I mean, they have top of the market tackle in Trent Williams, pretty much top of the market in Fred Warner, top of the market in, you know what I mean? Whoa. It's just like, in so many of these positions, you're just thinking, how many more of these guys can they sign?
So what happens if I told you that the Niners are spending $11 million in players that are no longer on the team? So you're talking, I was off. D Ford's making 8.5 in accounting terms, salary cap space. Jimmy Ward, 6.3. How is Jimmy Ward making? It's because they spread his cap out when he initially signed.
But I thought that once they're gone, the reason why it hurts too is because it all comes due at correct. Once. So why correct. Is D Ford still on the books, considering, I mean, how is it not because due once he left the team?
It depends on when he's cut. So that's why last year he was cut. He was designated as a post June 1st, which means it's last year and this year. If you cut him before June 1st, it accelerates all the way to this year's cap space. So again, it's an accounting trick, you can say. So if you're a team who's not very good and you got a ton of cap space available, you accelerate it all into this year because you do, there is a certain amount of salary you have to spend. So accelerate it all now. That gives you a cleaner version next year. Whereas if you're a team like the Niners, you're going for it and you need $2 million to sign Cleveland Farrell, you don't want all that accelerated into this year. You want to spread that out. How about Alex Mack making 1.5? Mack hasn't played in 2 years, but again, post June 1, so it'll spread out over multiple years, you know, so he's collecting. Your buddy Trey Sermon, 500,000. So, you know, you get to these guys and it's like, Niners have $11 million in spent.
They restructured Trey Sermon?
No, he didn't make it through his rookie contract, which is essentially guaranteed.
Oh, that's right. They cut him.
Yes. So.
Because it wasn't like they traded him. Because if they traded him.
Yeah, if they traded him, yeah, he would have gone. Oh, so, man. So, yeah. So, you know, there's guys like that on the team. So, yeah, that's why $11 million. That's why you can't just restructure because if you did, boy, you're hoping beyond hope that you can find really cheap replacements to match the production of the veterans. You're hoping the salary cap goes up enough to continue to make you be competitive, which is why it's so important for the Niners and their quarterback room to be productive right now with three guys under $10 million, right? Get it done now because Jimmy Garoppolo just signed for 20 plus, you know, Daniel Jones got what?
40.
40, you know, like then you're talking about a team so reliant on their quarterback carrying them during difficult times that you're not able to spend on a Javon Hargrave, you know, on the first day of free agency. You can't pay multiple linebackers like Dre Greenlaw and Fred Warner to be in your lineup. So that's why it's so important. And look, I know Parag took a lot of heat, early, you know, 10 years ago, when a lot of heat as being the guy who was in Jed's ear. But Parag has proved to be kind of an invaluable asset in terms of the way he's structured these contracts to keep them competitive, relevant, continue to maintain dollars available to extend their own free agent. We'll see that in Bosa. And make moves in free agency. So kudos to them.
Now I'm going to throw you a curveball and ask, do you know what Matt Ryan's contract is like with the Colts? And I'm asking because he just got cut. And I thought I had heard that, you know how when coaches get fired, but then if they get a new job, there's some sort of offsetting thing where if yep. the other team pays you a certain amount, then it deducts from the amount that the team which fired you would owe. And sure. I for some reason thought that I'd heard that was the case with Matt Ryan's contract, which mm-hmm. means again, hey man, bring Matt Ryan at QB4. Yeah. You don't even have to pay him that much. And yeah. he could be, because I just feel like the one thing missing in that quarterback room is that wise old sage, right? Who's been through the battles and can sort of give some, you know, like war stories to these young pups, even a Sam Darnold who's still yep. young, right? In his own right. I just think that he could be the Andre Iguodala of that quarterback room.
Yeah. So essentially, Matt Ryan has a base salary of $12 million, a dead cap hit of $18 million. So anything that he gets from another team will be deducted from the Colts cap. So the Colts are all for him signing somewhere else, you know, to make a couple million bucks because it doesn't change the amount of cash they've had to pay. It just reduces the amount of accounting numbers that, you know, it gives their spreadsheet another couple million dollars. And since they're clearly fine with him moving on elsewhere, that anything he signs for is a bonus for, it's a bonus for the Colts. He gets to go wherever he wants. He gets the same amount of money overall. It's coming from his, His W-2 is going to come from two different places, Indianapolis and wherever he signed for. So
it's
yeah.
It's not like Sam Darnold exactly had a clean injury history since being in the league. So come on, baby. Bring Matt Ryan aboard as well, QB4.
Well, I would imagine right now that you're going to see Matt Ryan just do absolutely nothing in terms of signing until September, until someone either loses a quarterback and is like, look, you know, boy, I mean, if you're the Rams and Stafford goes down or, you know, something like that, it's like, no, we need you to, you know, come in, we'll pay you some money. But at that point, yeah, you're Matt Ryan. Yeah, you're watching the Niner game. Anyone getting hurt yet? Anyone, you know, anyone moving up the depth chart? Because I'm available, you know. I know the system. I've stayed in shape. Now, it'll be interesting to see if Matt Ryan signs a contract to be an announcer or to do some television broadcasting. Because if that's the case, you got to think he's mailed it in terms of he's hung up the cleats. Because I don't know if you can – I don't know if you can go from the booth to the field, you know, as much as Philip Rivers tried to go from the high school headsets to the NFL. I don't know if you can go from, you know, calling games one Sunday and, hey, I got to fly down to Dallas because I'm taking over for Dak, you know, on Monday morning. So with that said, anything else in free agency, anything else that you think the Niners need to do outside of, you know, continue to look for depth pieces and, you know, look for pieces that can contribute or whatnot outside of Matt Ryan, which you just said, you know, hey, let's carry four quarterbacks.
No, I mean, they're just bargain shopping at this point. I mean, as much as it seems like they have an unlimited amount of cap space, whatever Parag Marate and all his you know, magic is doing behind the scenes. We're not sure, but I think at some point, you know, it's it. And you know, Javon Hargrave is this year's Charvarius Ward, right? They have one big splash, big ticket item. Yeah. They've cashed it in, and now it's just, all right, like, who's going to be left? Who wants to join a winner? Who wants to win a Super Bowl on the cheap to rebuild their career or just win?
Yep. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully the off season is, you know, somewhat uneventful. The next obviously big tent pole day for the NFL will be the draft in a little over a month. So we'll get to spend the next 4 or 5 weeks talking about, you know, what late third rounders the Niners are going to target, because without a first round pick, without a second round pick, you can pretty much cross off the top at least 80 guys, if not nearly 100 guys off, because they got what, pick 99, I think, is their first thing. So they're going to be able to cross off a lot of guys, which is probably why you're starting to see them and hear about them meeting with these mid-tier tight ends, tight end 3, tight end 4, because they're not getting the top tier guys and they don't have the ammunition. And nor would I think they want to, you know, trade up drastically, because they need depth pieces. They don't need guys to make immediate starters. If they can find a tight end who can come in and be, you know, a better version of Ross Dwelly in terms of, I can catch a few passes, I can block some guys, perfect. I think they're going to need another, you know, wide receiver. You're talking about, you know, Samuel Ayuk and Juwan Jennings, great, top three, love it. You know, Ray McLeod, great. You know, he was really good. Danny Gray, the speedster, we didn't get to see him, but he's going to be in the mix. But I would expect them to bring in another receiver to battle it out in camp to, you know, find their way onto the practice squad. So we'll see. With that said, what are your final thoughts?
Not so much of a thought as much as it's just an observation, I guess. Because, you know, the NCAA tournament tipped off today. Mm-hmm. Saw that the second-seeded Arizona Wildcats was upset by 15th-seed Princeton. Always fun to see those monumental upsets. But I actually don't know a soul on any of these teams. Because they all either go straight, right? The top players go straight to the NBA, or they only stick around maybe 1 year, right? They don't stick around long enough to kind of create a following. And I just thought about it. And I'm just like, does anybody even know any of these guys anymore? They're just, everybody's just picking schools just because. Mm-hmm. In fact, I almost feel like, not to say I know a lot of them, but just because they're around and you hear the names for a good 4 years, you probably know more of the women's basketball stars, like your Haley Jones out of Stanford or your Paige Beckers out of UConn, who's hurt right now, or your Caitlin Clark out of Iowa. Okay, those are only three I know. It's not like I know all of them. But I just wanted to throw it out there thinking, I wonder if more people would be more interested in watching the women's tournament more so than the men's, just because at least there's a sense of recognition and you know their story, right? And you're following it for 4 years versus like, all right, who's in it again? What team? You know, I mean, of course you're going to have your Cinderellas, your teams that are from these lower tier conferences that you've never heard of, but even from these big schools, you don't even know who they are anymore.
Yep. No, I agree with you, because unless you are an alum of the school or you are at least a solid college basketball fan and, you know, can take in the, you know, whoever the hot freshmen are on these top teams, you know, your Alabamas, your Dukes, your Houstons, you know, your Arizona, but clearly not as elite as everyone thought, you know, your UCLAs, those types, unless you can do that, it's hard because most casual fans are obviously filling out their bracket. Who am I going to fill out? I can't even root for Coach K. He's not even there anymore. Like, you know, boy, am I really going to take, what is it, Rick Pitino at Iona? Is that where Rick Pitino is now? I think
he's, I don't even know.
I think he is, you know, which is why it makes a team like Furman, who upset Virginia, Furman, a 13 seed, beat Virginia, a 4 seed, by 1 point, you know, it makes people go like, I have no idea where Furman is, but I love it. I am excited about them, you know, type of thing. So, yeah, there's nothing like Cinderella in March. So, and I, again, we don't talk about really what our final thoughts are going to be beforehand, but I was also going to talk about the NCAA tournament, kind of, but not in a positive way. And that's because, did you see what the University of North Carolina did?
But I was just going to say, it's funny that you mentioned, like, you know, the top schools like Houston, Alabama, like, I've never considered those guys top schools. I'm like, and why did you not mention UNC?
Well, University of North Carolina made history this year. They are the first ever preseason number one team to not make the tournament.
That's why I didn't see that.
That's why you did not see North Carolina in any of the 64/68. And here's my problem. My problem is they weren't good enough to get into the NCAA, and they rejected their bid to the NIT.
I was going to ask you if they're playing in the NIT.
No, and it's like, how arrogant are you that you don't believe? Look, you had plenty of opportunities to get in over, I don't know, Howard, BCU, Iona, Louisiana, Oral Roberts. I mean, there are a lot of teams that, like, you could have done more throughout the season to get into, and as a college basketball blue blood, you were going to get the benefit of the doubt. Should you have even been on the bubble? But you couldn't get there. And you're arrogant enough to say, we're too good for the NIT? Look, that might be the case for UNC's top, I don't know, 5, 6, maybe 7 guys who are going to go on and play in the NBA and collect millions of dollars. But for the back half of that team, you're going to take away their postseason just because you believe the NIT is beneath you. I'm sorry, but North Carolina, you need to check yourself right now. And instead of thinking about, we didn't make the NCAA, so we're not going, you need to figure out, hey, We didn't do enough. We're going to go out and win the NIT and show we could have done more. You're going to give the rest of your roster an opportunity to play in the postseason. Look, I know as much as we talk about the amateurism and these are young kids, it's not as much anymore, but there are kids who are playing in the NCAA who this is absolutely the peak of their athletic time. You know, I don't know. I'm going to guess Furman's not putting a lot of guys in the NBA off of this team. This might be the culmination of their entire sports career. And North Carolina is taking that away from what could be someone's Cinderella season, their one shining moment. Granted, it's in the NIT. So North Carolina, shame on you.
So how did this decision come about? Was it that the players decided to give up, or was it that the coaches said you don't even deserve to go? Like, how did Dean Smith must be rolling in his grave.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have no idea who made the decision. I don't know hopefully it's not the players. Hopefully it was the coach and the administration, but it's one thing if there was something egregious that we can't go. We our top three guys all broke their leg, but no, you weren't good enough this year. So
I'm reading a story on the USA Today. Now take it for what it's worth. It's the USA Today. It says that the North Carolina men's basketball coach Hubert Davis allowed his players to vote on whether to play in the NIT. And the school opted out of the tournament after the majority of players voted against it. Yep. The fathers of Tar Heels told USA Today.
Yeah. Terrible. So,
you know where it all comes from. All that gentle parenting. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
This is the result of the gentle parenting, people.
I get it. I agree. So, anyways. Next week, I don't know if we're going to have a lot of big news, but we'll keep track of the Niners and what they did roster-wise. I think we're going to start diving into, you know, a little bit of the draft prep, at least, you know, maybe not necessarily all for the Niners third-rounders. That's still going to be, you know, a work in progress. But it's time to start thinking about how things are going to, you know, pan out, especially at the top of the draft. What's going to happen? Panthers just locked in on Bryce Young. What's that mean for D'Amico Ryans and the Texans? What are the Raiders going to do? Are they really going to ride it out with Jimmy G, or are they going to try and make a move for one of these quarterbacks? Are they going to sit back where they are and take a quarterback and try and groom him to take over for Jimmy in a couple of years? Where are these top defenders? I mean, I don't know if you heard, what's his name? The defensive tackle for Georgia.
Jalen Carter
apparently couldn't even finish his pro day workout because he was out of shape, out of breath, whatever. So red flag, or, hey, when you're that good, you've just been on the banquet circuit too long and, you know, and you're gonna get back into it because
– What's a bigger red flag, that Jalen Carter couldn't finish his workout, or that C.J. Stroud said he looks up to Deshaun Watson? And collectively, his agent and PR folks were like
– Yes.
You could have chosen anybody.
Right. You could have chosen anybody.
You could have said Gardner Minshew.
Yes. New Colts.
And you landed on Deshaun Watson.
New Colts quarterback, Gardner Minshew. anyways. All right. So we'll get out of here. For Jerry, I'm Todd. Thanks for listening to the Niner guys. We'll have more information, more breakdown, more rosters. We'll talk about signings in episodes to come. But until then, we will see you later. Good night.